Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. I hope you were with me last week when I had a conversation with Craig Newmark, and we also talked about Everlasting Endowment. The founder of Craigslist joined me. He has created CraigConnects.org for nonprofits and those who support them, and we talked about the site and its areas of support. Craig really is an inspiration to nonprofits. I've been thinking about this the past week. The way he works outside of his comfort zone to inaugurate Craig Connects when he knows it's a good idea, but he doesn't really know how it's going to turn out. So I hope you'll listen to that. I hope you were with me for that show. And of course, it's always on iTunes. And also last week, I had the co-author of Foundation and Endowment Investing, Kathleen Ritterizer, joined me. She revealed strategies used by big endowment managers that you can take home to keep your endowment safe and invested right. That was a segment that your CFO and your board should hear. This week, event sponsorships and email security. Karen Perry, the president of Event Journal, shares her ideas on how to cultivate, solicit, and steward corporate sponsors so that you can raise big money for your events. And Howard Globus, the president of IT On Demand. Howard's going to have strategies to keep your email safe and sound and away from snoopers. He's got some great nonprofit discount sites for major league email and data security. So today I'm joined by two presidents in the studio. On Tony's Take Two, in between my guests, remind you that we are media sponsors for Fundraising Day in June. It's a big fundraising day here in New York City, and I'll talk a little about that. That is at roughly 32 minutes into the hour on Tony's Take Two. So all that is after this break, and right after the break, I'll be joined by Karen Perry. We'll talk about event sponsorships, so stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, always talking about big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. With me in the studio now is Karen Perry. She has been helping nonprofits raise more money from their galas and other major special events for more than 10 years. Karen has worked at several of New York's top advertising agencies on Fortune 100 accounts and has also worked in the nonprofit arena in a variety of advocacy, development, casework, and outreach positions. She has her master's in social work. In 2002, she founded Event Journal, the first web-based alternative to printed ad journals and program books. Karen is here to share her ideas about event sponsorships. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony.
Pleasure to have you. What's a sponsorship?
A sponsorship is an opportunity that's packaged where a third party or a second party organization can get some, derive some benefit from supporting another endeavor.
And we're generally talking about corporate sponsorships today, is that right?
Correct.
Does this fall into the same sort of pattern of fundraising that we see with individuals in that it's cultivation, solicitation, stewardship?
Well, there's a general pattern, yes, but there's a different motivation in general for corporate sponsors for individual donors.
Yeah, but we see the same sort of general flow. I mean, you're cultivating, soliciting, and stewarding.
Exactly.
Is that what you say? Okay, yeah. And we'll talk about each of those. You know, we'll talk about each of those little phases. What types of events are appropriate for sponsorship fundraising?
Well, there's generally a distinction between fundraising events and cultivation or stewardship events, although fundraising events require some stewardship as well to maintain the sponsors. But basically, a sponsored event can be anything from a dinner gala to a golf outing to a 5K run, anything where there's exposure to the public on behalf of the charity or nonprofit where the sponsor would derive some value from being publicly associated with it.
Right. And what are some of those sponsor motivations? Why are companies doing this?
Well, probably the most the one that most charities would assume is for the philanthropic value of it. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, corporate entities are run by people. And people have different experiences in life. So if the nonprofit organization is doing work that touches on the pulse or the heartstrings of the president or vice president or other key people in the company, they may wish to get behind it. If there's employees in the company who have been touched by a particular disease or helped by an organization, then they may want to rally behind that organization. But that's just a piece of it, is the philanthropic aspect.
Right.
There's also the what's in it for me. And I think that in this day and age, there's a big buzz going on right now about corporate social responsibility, cause marketing. And so it really behooves the organization to take a look at the exposure and recognition opportunities that they're offering to the sponsors when they support an event.
Now, we have Drug in Jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, and I don't want you to have a very long stint in Drug in Jail. You mentioned cause marketing. What does that mean?
Cause marketing is the opportunity, basically, for a company to or for a nonprofit to offer value to a company in association with its mission.
And how would somebody figure out whether a company has that kind of affinity for their mission? So how would a charity sort of sort that out?
Well, it always goes back to the people who are in the company, because companies are not faceless. They have people behind them. So if there's a company president who has a brother who was developmentally disabled, perhaps that would be a hot button for such an agency. But I think it's also a matter of, on the less philanthropic end, is, you know, what exposure to the public, what goodwill are they conveying to the community when the organization offers the sponsor an opportunity for exposure?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I'm sort of combining two areas. I mean, you're definitely talking about the mission-related interest that the company may have, and then also the sort of positive association interest that they would have being allied with being seen with the charity name.
Yeah. So the organization needs to do its homework to know who's being touched by which type of condition and whether or not their mission speaks to a responsible person within the company. But very often that's not something that they can identify. So then I think the best opportunity for most nonprofits is to put together compelling packages. And traditionally for nonprofit events, a dinner gala might have 300 guests or a golf outing might have 144 golfers at best. That's not a very big audience to be noticing the sponsorship support of a company. So in this day and age, there are so many digital opportunities and media opportunities to get the recognition factor out that the organizations need to understand.
And we're about to take a break. But when we come back from the break, we'll talk more about some of these marketing materials that you're recommending that nonprofits need to put together to make this compelling case to companies. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. Stay with us. Ding 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 ding
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right, but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then please join us starting Monday, May 2nd at 10 a.m. for Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. Please tune in and call as we discuss dating, relationships, and more. Start your week off with Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison on TalkingAlternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the show. I'm with Karen Perry, the president of Event Journal, which you'll find at eventjournal.com, and we're talking about event sponsorships. So, Karen, before the break, we're talking a little about the marketing materials that are appropriate for a charity to put together. What do those look like in sort of trying to cultivate the corporate sponsorships?
Okay, well, traditionally, the formula that's been used for the ages has been that initially to promote an event, there's a save the date card, goes out about 6 months before the event. Then there's typically a sponsorship letter that the charity writes that attempts to engage the company in connection to the mission, connection to perhaps an event honoree, connection to the recognition exposure that they're going to be offering. And a typical sponsorship package combines tickets or tables at the event along with certain benefits of recognition and association with the organization. So then, of course, the invitation packet comes out in which if there's someone who's committed early, sometimes their logo will be featured. And so, you know, the media message for the event starts churning, and then sponsorship is usually inclusive of some kind of recognition in association with the continuation of that. So if they have an advertisement in a newspaper, logos for sponsors can be identified. Email marketing, which is a newer component, logos are identified for sponsors. And then at the event, they'll typically have some sort of banners or some sort of a journal book where the sponsors and supporters are acknowledged by having an ad. And that'll be in combination with tickets.
It's sort of sounding like there has to be, you know, a lot of recognition, but could this work also for smaller organizations that are more locally based, but maybe they would just be reaching out to local companies?
Sure. Even a small organization, if they're having a 5K run, they have T-shirts where people can have logos for companies, I've seen dog walks where when you get there next to the water station, there's signage where the sponsors are being recognized. But for the larger events, probably the single biggest recognition opportunity traditionally has been the printed ad journal. And that's something that at this point is become somewhat passé, because the books are a passive piece. One of the opportunities that's out there right now for nonprofits is to use digital media in various forms to offer recognition and sponsorship exposure to the companies that underwrite their events. So now there's websites for events, there's email marketing where they expand to a much larger audience. Digital media is going to reach out to people who may not be in the room the night of the event, but who are still part of the larger database for the organization and community for the organization. So the more an organization can tie in to a variety of digital media, it expands from what used to be a printed piece or a printed advertisement.
Okay, and that's what your work is involved with at Event Journal, and we'll get into the recognition. I just want to sort of work our way into that. So there was another, you identified two reasons that companies would be interested in some kind of event sponsorship. That was an ally with the mission, that they'd be in sympathy with the mission, or just a positive association with a local organization. And then you mentioned a third, but let's investigate that one a little bit, the honoree relationship. Right. What is that?
Well, in the New York metropolitan market, honorees are a really tried and proven method for bringing revenue into the event. You know, as you get outside of the New York metro area, interestingly enough, it's not done as much.
Oh, really? This is not so common outside New York?
We've learned that. It's sometimes we're suggesting it to organizations, and it's kind of like an aha for them. But basically what that's all about is identifying somebody who's either done some incredible work or made contributions to the organization, or someone whose business, they can tie their business to the mission of the event, the organization, and or if not, just some prominent individual who's willing to put their name and their support behind the event for a particular year. And then they either are asked or requested or expected to bring in a certain amount of support along with their being recognized. So the honoree themselves generally underwrites the event from their company to some extent. They'll usually buy a couple of tables, or they'll invite their colleagues to buy tables. And then the big opportunity, depending on the prominence of the honoree, is to reach out to the vendors and suppliers and clients and colleagues of that particular business person or corporation, and you know, let them know that they should show support for the fact that their colleague is being honored.
Yeah. So what's the receptivity that you find in other parts of the country when you're having conversations with Event Journal clients or potential clients to this honoree idea that you said is new to them?
Well, I think that there's a general sense that, you know, asking people to... there's a discomfort I found with asking people to not only chip in a certain amount of money for their own company, but then reaching out to the next tier,
the vendors,
yeah, and kind of putting the arm on them, strong arming them to pony up some money. But I think at the end of the day, one of the real facts of fundraising is that it's sales. You've got to get out there. You've got to ask. You've got to give people compelling reasons to make their contribution. Words like stewardship and what were the other words?
Cultivation.
And, you know, you can couch those and euphemize them, but basically that's sort of like prospecting and following up and doing customer service. It's all the same thing. It's just different verbiage.
Mm-hmm. And you alluded to that. We didn't call it prospecting earlier when you were saying that there may be people in the company or heads of the company that are sympathetic to a mission because of their own family circumstances. That's the prospecting part of corporate sponsorships.
That's a piece of it, but I think it's also just knowing if there's a company that wants to come out as being a good citizen in the community, and you have an opportunity for them to get their logo and their recognition in front of 1,000 people who all share some common bond, where there's some warm and fuzzy feeling for the fact that they've supported a mission that's important to the individuals and the organization, that's important to know too.
Yeah, yeah. What about the... these honorees in doing this in other parts of the country? Are we really anomalous in New York City? I mean, what about other cities? Are they doing the honoree strategy?
They are. Their other cities are doing work with honorees, but a lot of times it's not as monetarily related. So, you know, they may end up honoring the chairman of the board, or they may honor a great volunteer who's, you know, the priest who started the program or something like that. In New York, we've kind of got it down to a science where you usually have two or three honorees. One is a business honoree who brings in the money. One might be a cause-related honoree. And a third might be just a scholarship recipient or somebody who's benefited from the program.
Okay. But the first of those, that business honoree here in New York, I mean, they are expected to put forth their vendor list, other friends of their company.
There's always an agreement.
Right, all to be tapped, right?
There's always an agreement between the charity and the honoree as to what level of involvement they're going to have, whether they're just providing a vendor list, whether they're sending out a letter to their supporters. One of the best examples we had recently was an honoree who stepped up personally, and we did a video message from Event Journal. We did a video message from that honoree that was blasted out on email that went to a couple thousand of people that the organization and this particular businessman knew. It was a personal appeal from him to support the organization. And then the email message clicked back into the website that Event Journal built for the event, where all the event information, the honoree's bio, everything to do with why they should support this charity. And then, of course, because it was an online journal, which is what our company does, it had the ads of the supporting vendors where everyone could see who was supporting this gentleman. And if your ad wasn't there, it was very publicly not there. Mm. And then because an e-journal is a public recognition opportunity, we also incorporate a shopping cart so people can buy their ads right then and there and you know, get their support recognized. Yeah.
And so these expectations are all laid out in advance so that the honoree and the charity know what each is expected to do.
In best practices, they are. Some organizations are not as bold as to have dollar figures. Some will just ask for support and sharing of lists. Sometimes it depends on who the honoree is and what can reasonably be asked and how strong the relationship is between the charity and that particular honoree.
Yeah.
If it's someone they barely know and they're just happy to have them lend their name to the organization, they have to tread lightly.
Yeah, expectations will be lower, sure. So I don't know how to interpret the New York City version of galas and honorees. I don't know if we're greedy or we're just ahead of the curve and the rest of the country will catch up.
I think New York we know that we're after the money. I mean, that's the whole purpose of a fundraising event. You can have nicey-nicey events or you can have fundraising events. In New York, I believe we feel it's about the bottom line.
All right. I'm with Karen Perry, and she's the president of Event Journal. We're talking about event sponsorships. Karen, who should be out soliciting for the sponsorships? Now, you know, of course, the audience here is small and mid-sized nonprofits, so they may not have the wherewithal to get the high-profile sponsorships, but who from the charity should be out soliciting these?
Well, I think that it's a communal effort. There's generally a few tiers of responsibility. Not every organization has a committee, but some do.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's an event committee,
a committee of volunteers, you mean?
Generally, it's a committee of volunteers, and they have some vested interest in the success of the event on behalf of the mission of the organization. So what I think is important for staff people to know is that their committee members aren't as well versed in why somebody should sponsor an event. They may not be as comfortable with the ask itself, but they have contacts and friends and colleagues and business connections within the community. So I think that they're a field that can be mined. I don't think that they're the ones who should be making the ask in general, unless you have a very sophisticated committee member. And then there's generally the gala co-chairs.
Okay, so wait. Well, so before we go to those, let's just focus on that volunteer committee, that event committee. So are they their role then, if they're not actually soliciting, asking for the sponsorship, they're more just setting it up so that then the staff member actually does the ask? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think that in an organization that's very well organized, there's generally a target list of companies, businesses, and corporations that they would like to have sponsor their event. I don't see that as often as I'd like to, but I think that anytime you start out with a target list, you have a much greater chance of actually closing sales or closing donation requests. So I think if you put out a list like that to a committee, you may find out that somebody's brother-in-law or sister-in-law is involved in the company, and that's information that you would have overlooked had you not asked for that. If you just said, oh, who knows anybody that could sponsor us,
right,
most committee
right.
members glaze over.
Yeah, but a more specific list. And then you had a suggestion to go beyond the event committee itself in terms of who should be out doing this marketing for you.
Right. Well, I mean, it's going to depend on the organizational structure of this particular event. We have clients where all the asks are done by paid staff. We have others where the board members are very involved in reaching out to their contacts. Then there's generally a gala or an event chairperson. Sometimes there's a sponsorship committee, which is more focused than the committee at large. So I think really it depends on the structure of the event organization. But in general, what I found is that the actual ask can be started by someone on the committee or the board, but the conclusion and what level and what they get for that and how you package the benefits, it's generally got to be done by a dedicated staff person in general.
And in terms of that board involvement, is that really just about as far as it should go? I mean, what do you think is the best practice for the degree to which the board members should be involved in this whole process? Might they also be identifying potential sponsorship opportunities?
Absolutely. They might be identifying sponsorship opportunities. I think the board's primary benefit in this type of endeavor is identifying future honorees.
Okay.
And then once they know someone who they can tap for an honoree for an upcoming event, then it's their relationship with that person perhaps that they can then go and make the ask. And then that ask includes, who do you know, Mr. or Ms. Honoree, that could become sponsors and support your being recognized by our organization.
And there's a number of times that a potential sponsor needs to be asked, right, or receive marketing materials before you're actually going to get an action out of them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that the fundraising sector in general is not as up on marketing methodology as I think that they could be. And so typically with any kind of sales or marketing effort, you need a minimum of 4 to 6 times of exposure and recognition of a message for someone to even take action, and more like 6 to 12 times for them to really be compelled to do something about it. So what I described earlier with the save the date card, the sponsor letter, the invitation, and maybe a phone call from the organization, that's a bare minimum. And this is 2011. We have electronic media and we have social media and we have, you know, you can have a Facebook page, you can have email marketing, web-based materials. There's just so many opportunities to get in front of potential sponsors.
What's the revenue expectation for sponsorships around a single event?
Can you clarify?
Yeah, how much of your revenue from an event do you think should be coming from the sponsorships?
Well, I think that depending on what the revenue streams are, the percentage is going to vary. If it's a sit-down dinner and there's ticket sales and then there's sponsorships, you know, the vast majority of the money should come in from sponsorship packages for any successful event. The ticket sales are generally just the upcharge between the out-of-pocket cost and the ticket price, and so there's not as much potential, whereas a sponsor dollar, if someone's donating $10,000 as a sponsorship and they're getting a table and that table has 10 seats that cost the organization $100. So the upcharge is $9,000. There's also organizations that have journals. And so the journal is where companies can buy an ad, and it's just a matter of all the ad revenue comes together. Sponsors get ads, but then people can also buy ads individually. So the cost of printing or publishing or electronically publishing that journal is taken out of the cost. So if they have tickets and sponsorships, I think it should be at least 60%, if not more, of the revenue. If they also have a journal, then you put the journal together with the sponsorships, and then that should be a very large percentage of the revenue.
Okay. I polled our listeners and people who follow the show on Facebook and on Twitter. Their replies, there were just a few, but their replies were that they're... their sponsorship revenue came in either between 26 and 50%, or it was a combination of anywhere from 0 to 100.
Right. So to me, that's a huge opportunity for them to do better.
You think low.
I think that's low.
You should be vast majority.
Well, that's because I'm thinking they're not tapping sponsorship opportunity as best they can.
Okay. Just in the minute or so that we have left, let's talk about the recognition, because that's where your work is. The recognition that the corporate sponsor gets. What should that look like? Say a little more detail than you said.
Well, there's on location at the event recognition, and then there's at large recognition. So at the event, it should be very apparent who the supporters are. With Event Journal, we produce the e-journal online, and then we bring it to the event with a presentation where all of the ads are being shown on big screens and everybody sees who the sponsors are throughout the night. It's very colorful and robust. Mm-hmm. Other times there's a printed ad book where there's an ad on a page in the book. Sometimes, depending on the nature of the event, if it's not a very elegant event, they may have a banner for the company or a poster board. They may get recognition from the dais. Sometimes a top sponsor gets to have a few remarks from the dais.
Okay.
And then outside of the event, there's all of the event promotional materials, like the event website, which can have logos and journal ads, and there's sponsorship letters, and there's all kinds of materials where they can identify who the supporters are.
My guest has been Karen Perry, and she's the president of Event Journal, which you'll find at eventjournal.com. Karen, thank you very much for being on the show.
You're quite welcome. It goes fast.
It's been a pleasure. we're going to take a break, and after this break, Tony's Take Two, and then I'll be joined by Howard Globus, the president of IT On Demand, and we'll talk about email security. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. It's time for Tony's Take Two at roughly 32 minutes into the hour. We are media sponsors for the New York City chapter of Association of Fundraising Professionals, AFP's Fundraising Day. And that is the largest one-day fundraising conference in the world. It's on Friday, June 10th at the Marriott Marquis Hotel in Times Square here in New York. And I'll be interviewing the conference's speakers for this show. So I'll be interviewing them, podcast interviews, and then later on they'll be replayed on the show. You can get information about the conference at www.afpnyc.afpnet.org. Again, afpnyc.afpnet.org. I always talk about my blog for the week, but this week I had a guest blogger. My blog is at mpgadv.com, and you'll see that my guest blogger is Howard Globus this week. And Howard is also the guest on this show this week. So that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, May 13th. And now it's a pleasure for me to welcome Howard Globus to the studio. Howard, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Howard has over 15 years' experience designing, installing, and supporting Windows server and workstation products in industries where security and reliability are critical. He's worked with Mount Sinai NYU Health System and the Hospital for Special Surgery. He's president of IT On Demand, and he's here to bring his big nonprofit technology ideas to the other 95%. I'm very glad that his work brings him to the studio. Howard, you have some suggestions about email security. Why don't we start with the most basic, the password for email?
Okay. Good afternoon. As I mentioned in the blog, your password should not be the same as your luggage tag or your luggage lock. Many people keep a luggage lock of 000 or 1234. And currently, the most common password out there happens to be password with a capital P.
Oh, but but people do put a capital P on it.
Yes.
But that's not enough to confound snoopers?
Not enough. And actually, some people put a capital P and a number one at the end. So that's very good. We like to say...
That's sarcastic. He's being sarcastic. That's not very good. No, you can't tell because you don't see him. Yeah, he doesn't mean that's very good. Please,
no.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Basically, you want to take a look at having as complex a password as you can to maintain security. That means doing simple things like making sure your password is not in the dictionary. People may choose a word at random in the dictionary, but a very typical hacking attack would be to have a list of dictionary words, sometimes 100,000, 200,000 words, and then programmatically attack your email by just going through the words. If your password...
So there are programs that can go through the whole dictionary or 100 or 200,000 words, all trying to hit just one person's password?
There are programs that can actually go through about 5 million password words in approximately 6 hours.
Oh,
so
wow.
These exist out there in the world, and it's not somebody sitting behind a screen one at a time. It's actually an automatic process that just runs. So when somebody uses a capital letter on the first word of the word or adds a number one or two at the end, it's not a very good password. What you want to be looking at is having a complex password. Sometimes about 8 or 9 characters is usually a good starting point. Having a number or an additional character like a tilde or an asterisk in the password somewhere. Commonly, people replace the letter E with the number 3.
Yeah, what about those replacements? Like E, right, 3 for E and @ for...
For an A.
What does that go? Oh, for A. Yeah. That's right, right. Do those work? Or?
They do work, but again, those are common replacements. So you want to try and switch it up a little bit. Instead of having an 8 or a 0 for the letter O, you might want to take a look at a 7 or something like that, something that's not common. The most important thing to understand is given enough time and enough computing power, any password can be cracked. So you really want to make it as complex as possible and, frankly, not worth someone's time to use up the bandwidth to try and crack the password.
Okay. I don't know if people are aware that it's so easy and that just the automation allows such sort of harsh attacks on a password in a very systematic way.
Correct. And, yeah. I mean, typically things like Hotmail or Gmail, even MacMail, these are things that are susceptible because they're known addresses and they're common. So a lot of people will go ahead and attack those, Gmail, that kind of thing.
Now, we're talking about the email password, but does the same apply for your other passwords, like system passwords?
Definitely.
Same theories apply?
And depending upon where you are and the amount of money and or lists that you have available to you will make you a more attractive or less attractive target. And based on how attractive a target you are, you may be under attack on a fairly regular or constant basis.
Yeah, charities have donor databases,
exactly.
And often they're preserving dates of birth, maybe credit card numbers.
Correct.
They might save to make it more convenient for the person, for the donor to give, but that means they're more susceptible to attack because that's high-value information.
Correct. Bank routing information, bank account information, all that stuff can be available to a hacker.
Yeah. My interest in this topic started because, and I mentioned this in the blog post, because I got 5 emails from different companies that I do business with, all related to hacking that occurred at a company called Epsilon, which I've never heard of, but apparently they do a lot of email distribution and email management for a lot of big companies, because these were all big company names that I got the warning email from. But Epsilon, I've never heard of.
Epsilon is actually one of the biggest companies out there. They manage many lists for folks as varied as Sony, Bed Bath & Beyond, PayPal to some extent. So, I mean, these are companies that Epsilon works with, and they have hooks into each of these systems, so they're a perfect target.
And when a company hires this back-end company, which you're saying is huge, but I don't think the typical user has ever heard of them.
It's not a common name.
Right, but they're huge. You're relying on the front-end company to be managing their relationship with the back-end company, and that's going to apply to nonprofits too, right?
Definitely.
If a nonprofit is hiring a vendor, what do you make sure of your agreement says when you're hiring somebody else to manage your lists for you?
Well, one of the things you definitely want to take a look at when you are using an outside vendor is what kind of errors and omissions insurance they happen to have. That's certainly an after-the-fact kind of thing, but certainly something that you want to have in place. You want to know that they're even thinking about it. If you ask an outside consultant, you know, what kind of errors and omissions insurance you have or data security insurance you have, and they look at you blankly, that's not a vendor you want to be talking with very much further.
Okay.
Furthermore, you want to make sure that they have non-disclosure agreements in place and that they have some kind of security system that's audited that you can then go ahead and take a look at least on a quarterly basis.
Oh, that the nonprofit can audit the security system?
Correct.
How does that work?
Usually a vendor that is working with not-for-profits or for large firms will have to have their systems audited on a regular basis to be compliant with either HIPAA requirements or SEC requirements or some not-for-profit requirements. And if they are doing an audit on a regular basis, they'll have a report that they can then go ahead and provide back to the customers.
Okay, excellent. Let's talk about attachments, since we're focusing mostly on email, but not exclusively. What about those lurking attachments? What's your advice?
There's an increase in what's known as phishing out in the in cyberspace.
And why don't you spell phishing so keep you out of the jargon jail?
P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G,
yeah,
I believe.
I just wanted to make the point that it's not phishing like throwing a rod, but it starts with P-H.
Exactly.
Please, go ahead.
The concept is that an email is sent that looks very similar to a normal email that would come from one of your credit card companies or a processing company or your bank or what have you. And that email will have a logo and it will have all the text formatted almost the same as that email coming from the actual valid location would be. And they would have a link on it saying something like, please update your password. PayPal had this happen quite a bit about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. You may also get an email from someone claiming to be UPS saying we have a package that needs to be delivered. Please click on this link to confirm your delivery instructions. And when you click on that link within the email, it will take you to a website. And that website may look very similar to the company that you're using's website.
The company you think you're going
to. Correct, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But in fact, it's a phishing site. And what they'll do is they'll ask for information, personal information, sometimes credit card information. And their statement is they're looking to confirm that you are who you say you are. But in fact, what they're doing is what's called social engineering and asking for information that normally you would provide. And you provide it fairly freely. And then that's information that can be used later on to extract funds.
Jeez. Okay. So what's your advice then? If you get something, well, how do you tell whether it's legitimately from UPS or it's not?
In almost no cases will a vendor that you're working with ask you to send their information, your information, via email or click through on the website. The way to always check is if you log on to the company's website directly outside of the email attachment, but rather going directly to your browser.
Okay, so now you're in the you're ignoring the email, you're going
correct.
Right to your browser, and in the browser address window.
Correct.
You're saying
you're typing UPS.com or PayPal.com. And then put your credentials in there. If an email went out saying you need to update something, it'll have a notice on that website to say, hey, you need to update something.
All right, because you've logged in, so they know that it's you.
Correct.
They would know if they had sent you the email, they're going to know, and they'll
exactly.
remind you of whatever it is they wanted you to do after you've logged in. Okay. Why don't you we just have a minute before a break. Why don't you say a little bit about firewalls and what firewall protection is, and then we'll look more at it after the break.
Traditionally, computers come with firewalls, whether it's a Mac, a PC, or a Linux-based operating system. That's a piece of software that will try to keep your system safe. And using that software, there's a degree of comfort that the end user has. The question is that comfort valid? And that's something that really needs to be investigated, depending upon where the system is connected to, how it's connected to the internet, and what are the things you're doing on the machine.
Mm. Okay, we'll look more about that. Look more at that in a moment. Take a break right now, and then Howard Globus will stay with us. So I hope you do too.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you love movies? Then join me and share your opinions about them on the radio. This is Mike, a movie fan like you. Starting May 10th, join me every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. for my new show, Movie Time, on TalkingAlternative.com. Call me live or email me at MovieTimeRadio@gmail.com. We'll talk about all the blockbusters, who's the best director, and which movies are overrated, among many other topics. Join me for Movie Time, Tuesdays at 6 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right, but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then please join us starting Monday, May 2nd at 10 a.m. for Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. Please tune in and call as we discuss dating, relationships, and more. Start your week off with Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison on TalkingAlternative.com.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
I'm with Howard Globus, and he's the president of IT On Demand. We're talking about email security. You'll find his company at it-on-demand.com. Before the break, Howard, we're talking a little bit about firewalls. So it's a degree of protection between the outside world and your inner network.
Correct. To speak a little bit more about that,
yeah.
Most computers come with a firewall either pre-installed or something that you can turn on. The problem with pre-installed firewalls on a computer is that they need to be hardened. They need to be locked down a bit, which makes it a little bit more less user-friendly on the computer itself. One of the things we recommend is a firewall that's protecting your entire network, whether that's a home network of one or two PCs or Apples or a corporate network. A device that actually has a more robust process and really is designed specifically to act as a firewall as opposed to a firewall and a word processor and a web browser and all the other kind of things that a computer is.
Okay, and what kinds of things is this wall protecting you from?
The wall protects you from a number of different things. For example, some of the password attacks that we were talking about, not so much on the email side, but certainly on the server side, the database side, things that would be password protected internally on the network. Additionally, it protects you from viruses and potential malware or little programs that get downloaded by folks who are surfing the web. Or
you can tell Howard's afraid of jargon jail because he instantly says malware or little programs. Gets that definition right in there. Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Little programs that get downloaded when folks open up attachments in emails or surf to certain websites. The firewall, what it does is it actually monitors the traffic that goes from the outside in and from the inside out. And that's a critical piece because if you have a network of any degree of complexity, which really more than one PC is a degree of complexity, the potential is that there are programs that get installed on your computer that you may not be aware of. And by monitoring the firewall, you can find out what programs are what we call calling home or sending information from the machines back to some other server.
So you don't just set this firewall up and then forget about it.
No.
You monitor it.
That would be ideal. Basically, a home user might have a firewall that they would really ideally take a look at least once a week and take a look at the logs.
What about a small office, maybe three or four computers networked?
A small office that operates on a typical 9-to-5 business day but leaves their machines on so that way folks can work remotely should have an active monitoring system as opposed to a passive monitoring system. What that means is that when a potential violation occurs, it emails or notifies out someone who's monitoring that firewall on a regular basis. So you would do things like patch management and upgrades on a monthly basis, take a look at the firewall logs on a weekly basis, but have active management and active notification on an hourly or sometimes up to the minute basis.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what types of things are you getting alerts about?
Well, there's a number of different things. A most common alert that we would get is we would have intrusion detection. So there would be websites and you'd have an external website or an external address from somewhere out in the world that's attempting to connect in using different protocols, things like FTP, which is a file transfer protocol, or using things over port 80, which is the web protocol. That's things that people use to get out on an Internet Explorer or Safari browser. But it also is a whole range of different ports that are open and or potentially open. And if those ports are open, every port is a potential access point.
And these ports are connections into your computer, into
Correct.
And out of your computer.
Correct. Right.
How does the small nonprofit budget for all this, for the software that they need to protect their network?
Well, ideally you'd be looking at, or a small nonprofit would be looking at some kind of managed service that has a pay per month as opposed to pay as you go type of fee. The pay as you go type of fee can get very expensive very quickly. If you have a monitoring program in place and you say, okay, we know that monitoring is going to go on for this month and we'll give you a report at the end of every week or at the end of every month, and we will go ahead and remediate any of the types of issues that we see, and it's all included into one service. And that would be ideal. The reason why that's ideal over as a pay as you go is the types of intrusion detection varies widely depending upon what your internet service provider is, the time of the year it is, and frankly, how valuable your information is assumed to be from an outside source.
Roughly, how much would a small office get? Well, are the fees for that type of service based, I assume, on the number of users? Is that right? Or
no? The fees are based on the complexity of the device that's actually being used as the firewall. A more complex environment a more complex environment might have multiple firewalls, and you'd be looking at something where you have to monitor multiple access points. A small environment, let's say 5 users or 5 people working in an office, would probably only have a single firewall, fairly non-complex firewall at that, and really you'd be looking at maybe $70 a month in terms of monitoring fees.
Okay. That active monitoring you said should be even hourly for some of the things.
Yes.
Some of the dangers that are out there.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Okay. I know you brought some resources with you.
Yes.
That are specific for nonprofits. Why don't you share those for discounts and things?
Okay. Well, the top website for discounts for nonprofits is TechSoup. That's TechSoup.org. That's a website that actually matches nonprofit companies with donor companies, specifically software and hardware vendors. So Microsoft, Adobe, Symantec, all the big companies go ahead and provide software if a nonprofit can show their nonprofit status and show a need.
Okay, so these are huge names. Is there another one you have, or is really TechSoup?
TechSoup is the main one for nonprofits. And then there's a website, Sans, S A www.nsns.org, which deals with specific security issues and can talk a lot about auditing and keeping things up to date.
Okay, and does sans.org also have discounts? Or that's
no,
more,
sans.org is just a resource for things that are going on in the IT world.
All right. That's Howard Globus, and he is the president of IT On Demand, which you'll find at it-on-demand.com. Howard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Next week, our tech contributor and the editor of Nonprofit Technology News, Scott Kegler, will be with me. He's going to share the latest from his newsletter, and I hope you'll be with me for that. You can keep up with what's coming up week to week by signing up for our insider email alerts on the Facebook page. While you're there, click like and become a fan of the page, please. You can listen to the show on iTunes at any time, on the device of your choice, at the time of your choice. That's at nonprofitradio.net, and each show is up usually by the Monday following. I want to thank my guests this week, Karen Perry and Howard Globus, the two presidents, for coming into the office, coming into the studio and joining me. The creative producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is Claire Meyerhoff. Our line producer is Sam Leibowitz. He's also the owner of Talking Alternative Broadcasting. Our social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. I'm Tony Martinetti, the host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, always talking about big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I hope you'll be with me next Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, here at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Do you love movies? Then join me and share your opinions about them on the radio. This is Mike, a movie fan like you. Starting May 10th, join me every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. for my new show, Movie Time, on TalkingAlternative.com. Call me live or email me at MovieTimeRadio@gmail.com. We'll talk about all the blockbusters, who's the best director, and which movies are overrated, among many other topics. Join me for Movie Time, Tuesdays at 6 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.